Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. On today's episode, contributor Amanda Moore interviews Wanda Morse, author of the novel Anywhere You Run.
Today, I am very excited to speak with Wanda Morse. Wanda is the acclaimed author of All Her Little Secrets, which was named as one of the best books of 2021 by Hudson Booksellers, and it won the 2022 Lefty Award for Best Debut Mystery Novel. Wanda has been nominated for the Anthony Award, the Strand Critics Award, the McCavity Award, and her book was shortlisted for the Crooks Corner Book Prize. Today, we will be discussing her new book, Anywhere You Run, which is quickly being recognized by media outlets across the country as the crime fiction book to read. It was named one of the top 10 crime fiction books of 2022 by the New York Times, one of the best books of 2022 by NPR, Publishers Weekly, and Amazon. And of course, I have to mention Oprah Daily, which has listed it as one of the 15 standout historical fiction books to read this year. Wanda is a former corporate lawyer, a mother of three, and she lives in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome, Wanda, to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you so much for having me, Amanda.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your book for those who have not had a chance to read it yet? They will, but the ones who haven't read it yet, can you give us a little summary about it?
Sure. So I'd like to describe Anywhere You Run as a coming of age story with a few dead bodies thrown in for extra measure. But it is the story of two young sisters growing up in the Jim Crow South, 1964, Jackson, Mississippi. And one of the sisters, Violet Richards, is brutally attacked, but she kills her attacker. She is a Black woman in the Jim Crow South, so she knows she won't get justice. So she takes off running. Back home, her sister, Marigold, is also in a bit of trouble as well because she finds herself pregnant and unmarried, which was a big no-no for good girls in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. When the police show up at her door looking for Violet, she figures this is a great opportunity to get out of town as well to make sure she doesn't get caught up in the murder. And as well cover up the unplanned pregnancy. But what the two sisters don't realize is that there is a very dangerous man who knows about the murder. And he takes off in pursuit of the young women with a very unique motive for finding them.
Now, what I like about your book is that you incorporate many different themes within your narrative. You explore race, sisterhood, crime, relationships, domestic violence, and segregation all at the same time, and you do it in a seamless way. Why did you pick this era, the 1960s, right after the civil rights legislation was being passed? A lot of historical events were happening. Why did you pick that time frame for this story?
That's a great question. I came up with this idea shortly after I had finished my first book and turned it into my publisher. And I was looking for another topic to write about and actually thinking I would write something in a contemporary vein. But we had just come through the 2020 election. And there was all this noise about the big lie and, you know, election fraud. And I thought, that might be interesting to write about. But I couldn't really figure out a contemporary angle to get into the story. So I started thinking to myself, you know, we're talking about election fraud and essentially election suppression, voter suppression. And I just thought, how did we get here? How did we get to a place now where a lie is not a lie and the truth is no longer the truth? And so I started researching the Voter Rights Act of 1965 and thought, maybe I could attack the issues, some of the very same issues that we're grappling with here in 2023, through a narrative that looks backwards at 1964. And the reason why I selected 1964 versus 1965 is because everybody who knows, you know, American history knows that there had long been a fight for voter rights for Blacks long before 1965. But 1964 was almost pivotal in voter rights, because that was the year of the Freedom Summer Project, the year that Cheney Goodman and Schwerner were murdered in Mississippi. And I thought that would be a flashpoint where the story could take off.
And that's really great that you described that, because what also resonated with me was that you showed segregation from the character's point of view in everyday situations. For example, many of us have read about segregation, heard stories from our parents about it and relatives, but many folks now have never experienced it the way that your characters do in the book. So did you feel it was important for readers now to see a scene through your character's eyes?
Absolutely. I think what I wanted to do with not only Violet and Marigold, the two sisters who are the main protagonists, but also other characters in the story and how segregation impacted them as well. And I mean, both Black and white characters in the book. So, you know, as you mentioned, we've all kind of heard about, you know, the separate facilities for Blacks and so forth. But I think one of the things that people didn't understand as well was that segregation also used class and class structure to also enable their racist policies. Yeah. So, for example, there's a character in the book, Mercer, who is white, but is obviously from the poor section, poor white section of town. And he too is caught up in these segregationist policies and how they impact his life. And there are other characters like the Kuglers, but it was important that if I were going to tell this story, if I were going to create a narrative around these issues, that they needed to examine kind of the totality of what segregation could do to everyone that was involved, including, you know, people like, you know, the White Citizens Councils of Mississippi and those folks. Yeah.
And there are other scenes that you had when you're talking about this world. You have Violet. She describes how the clerk would place the change on the counter so that she wouldn't have to touch her hand, like those little things that we take for granted now, right? And also one character also saw police violence against a Black man and was helpless to do anything about it. So did you find yourself wanting to add more scenes to convey this type of this world, which is actually what I think, what my opinion, why people are picking up on this, is this type of this is not fantasy or sci-fi. This happened, and it's being told now in this way that we can, of course, relate. But these types of things happened on a regular basis. And so my question is for the writers out there, how did you know when to stop telling the story? Because you could go on and on with all the different incidents, right? You have the person in the home as, thinking the person in the home as far as with housekeeping, you had travel, you had all these different things that Black women went through or Black men went through. So how did you stop the story, or how did you resolve that?
That is a really good question. You zeroed in on it. Just to back up for a moment, when I started this book, I, of course, I talked to older relatives. I have, my parents were products of the Jim Crow South. They are both from Alabama. And so I had heard these stories about these day-to-day interactions. And so when I started to research the book, I always give a shout out to the Research Library on African American History and Culture here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That library, as part of the Fulton County Library System, is a treasure trove of information about our history, which is American history. And I went in there and they opened up all these books and papers. And so, for example, the scene where I describe what it's like for a Black person to go to the county clerk to get an application to vote and what happened. I read firsthand accounts of Black Mississippians, and these were actual stories that these people told, that, you know, they were required to, you know, count the number of jelly beans in a jar, or estimate the number of soap bubbles in a bar of soap, presumably as IQ test. And so there was all this wealth of information of these day-to-day touch points and interactions between Blacks and whites that I had a slew of them. And because the book is a thriller, so it's supposed to be pacey, I would have loved to have included more information like that. So what I tried to do in creating these characters was to take those that had the most impact, like you mentioned, not being able to simply hand a clerk a dollar bill for fear that, you know, you would touch a white person or they would be tainted by you. When the sisters go to a store to buy a dress, they aren't permitted to try the dress on because if they needed to return it or try it on, it would be considered soil. So I tried to grab those kind of day-to-day interactions that really kind of resonated. And to your point, the things we take for granted. I go shopping and it's nothing for me to carry two or three items into a dressing room and try them on. That wasn't always available to us.
Yeah. And one of the things I noticed is that the characters are basically on, like, almost on the side. They have their main story, but they're on the sidelines of notable events, because you mentioned the challenges that a Black person had in the South trying to vote. And Marigold works in an advocacy, or is it the name of the center where an NAACP attorney comes? So she's working to advocate for the rights of people to vote in the city. And so was that something that you found easy or challenging to incorporate your character stories into things that actually happened, where we had committees and things trying to advocate for voter rights?
Yeah. So it's part of the research, because I knew that I wanted to touch on voters' rights for Blacks. I knew that I wanted to incorporate certain things. And so the Freedom Summer, for example, and the opening scene of the book, and the, you know, SCLC and NAACP and the whole core. So, you know, I knew going into the book that I would incorporate those. The challenge was to find a way to incorporate it without weighing the book down, without making the book feel fact intensive and heavy, but to give a light touch, but enough touch so that you recognized what the character's involvement was in these historical points in time.
So I know that this is, and you're right, you incorporate a lot of great historical facts, notable facts, but you also have it as part of the story and pacing and tension. Wanda, I gotta tell you, I was so tempted to say, is she gonna be okay? You know, but I had to stay with the storyline here. So let's
talk
about
the best compliment that a writer can get. So thank you for that.
Oh, great. So let's talk about the genre of this book. So it's referred to as crime fiction, historical fiction, suspense, women's fiction. How would you classify this book, or how would you like readers to take this book?
You know what, that, oh gosh, I've never been asked that question. I got into writing because I've always liked thrillers. You know, when I was working as a lawyer, I had jobs where, you know, I had to fly cross country. And so I would pick up a book that was pacey enough that I knew I could finish it on, you know, a 4 or 5 hour flight, or, you know, because I knew once I got home, I'd put it down, I'd get busy or something. And so thrillers always kind of fulfilled that need for me. So when I decided to start writing books, this genre just kind of felt natural. Now, having said that, I am always, always, always engaged by women's stories, particularly Black women, because our stories are so complex and intricate, because we're not like a monolith, obviously. We all have, you know, different lives and different hopes and different dreams. And so I am always, I'm always curious how a woman or a Black woman would react in certain situations. I read a John Grisham novel and I think to myself, I don't know if a sister would necessarily, you know, react that way. And so that's always kind of been the driving force. And so I think what happens, I write these stories, but I think they wind up melding genres. And so, you know, I get, you know, historical kind of mixed in with, you know, thriller and suspense. Or my first book, All Her Little Secrets, was kind of legal thriller and women's fiction. I'm currently working on a book now that, you know, Mel's a little paranormal, but always, always my books examine what it's like to be a woman in America.
And I'm glad you mentioned, I know we're talking about Anywhere You Run, but I did read All Her Little Secrets. And as it was nice to see the perspective of a Black woman corporate lawyer and the different type of office politics that she has to do with certain things that you kind of have to live it to understand it. So I know we're talking about this book, but that was a great book. It was really, really incredible as well. So while I have you, I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
One of the things that you did in this book, and a technique that I really have grown to really enjoy, is stories told from different points of view. And so you have the perspective of Violet, you have the perspective of Marigold, and you have the perspective of Mercer, the gentleman that you mentioned before. And I noticed that Violet and Marigold are told in first person. And Mercer is told, I guess you would say, is third person limited. So was there a reason behind that? Is just that just kind of the way the story developed, or what made you want to tell the story from different viewpoints?
I wanted Violet and Marigold's story told in first person because their story, their journey, I guess is the right word. Their journey was so personal, and the things that happened to them were so personal. If you know, you read the book, you realize that they're both holding secrets from one another, even though they're sisters and they're close. And so I needed the reader to be immersed in each of their viewpoints so that they could understand the secrets that they were keeping and the reasons why they were keeping those secrets, and could understand and feel their journey. With Mercer, once I realized how the book was going, to the narrative was going to be driven by his pursuit of them, I needed the reader to be able to see a larger vantage point. And so telling Mercer's story in third person gave me the opportunity to provide that vantage point, so he could be the eyes for the reader to kind of look around that the sisters couldn't see, because all they could see is what they could see. But Mercer had a bigger vantage point. He could see what was going on with segregation, both in the South and in the North. And so he could tell the larger story of what was going on around all three of these people.
Now, there's another thing that you did when I say the tension and suspense. So I get why it says suspense on the cover, because there were some scenes that actually resonated with me as well. You touch on the experience of a Black person, more specifically a Black woman being stopped by the police. And you mentioned something that many Black women and men have experienced, even advising their teenagers about what to do if you're ever stopped. Was it important to you to show the survival strategies that people utilized during that time? I mean, it just became a part of reminders while people are walking out the door. Was it important for you to show that to the reader?
Oh, absolutely. Because again, that goes back to your earlier question, talking about those day-to-day interactions. And, you know, my father always told us the story of how when he was growing up in Alabama, that the general rule was, if you didn't have to interact with white people, then don't. You know, of course, there were times where you had to. And if you had to, then these were the things that you did, what we now call the talk. But back then, it was the way of life. And so, you know, you didn't look a white person directly in the eye. You crossed the street to avoid being on the same side of them. You never, never, never would be alone in a room with, if you were female, with a white man, if you could avoid it. And similarly, you know, my dad said, growing up, you just didn't sit in a room with a white woman alone because you'd be accused of all sorts of things. And so these were just the ways in which people operated in their daily life. And how unfortunate, right?
Yeah.
But again, I was trying to tell a historical narrative with historical accuracy.
And you had mentioned, as far as with the Mercer character, seeing segregation both in the North and the South. And there's one thing you do is you highlight the big city versus the small town in the South. And when I say small town for our listeners, I'm talking about the kind where they know when someone's new in town. When you know your neighbors, you know everyone coming and going. And even in this crime fiction novel, you do something that you provide a sense of community for the main characters. Is that something that you intended to do as well? Did you want to show that? Or did that something just naturally develop as you told the story?
Well, that I think in both my books, I try and do that. I try to provide the sense of community, whether in all her little secrets, it's a community within a corporate office space or a small town like Chillicothe, Georgia, and anywhere you run. For me, I know how I grew up, and I grew up with women supporting me, not only the women in my family, but teachers and neighbors and all sorts of people who enveloped me and said, you know, Wanda, that might not be the smartest route to take, or why are you over there talking to that guy, whatever it was. And so I think it was important to this story, because this was a coming of age story, that these women found community in their respective places where they landed. Marigold is in the North in Ohio, and Violet in Georgia. But they both found this community, this sense of community that took them in and supported them and protected them and guided them. Because I think that was kind of how I grew up, and it was what made me what I am. So,
why did you pick two sisters as opposed to any other family dynamic? Why sisters?
You know, I have this thing about sibling relationships. The last book also had a sibling relationship. that was integral to the story. But I think this one had to be about sisters because the issues that they were grappling with were issues that were really pertinent to women. And so, you know, anything from, you know, Violet's way in which she kind of, you know, went about her business in town and who she saw and what she did with her time, and having an older sister who, you know, kind of poo-poos that. But then you have the older sister who's playing the good girl, who gets into a bit of trouble. And then Violet is, you know, kind of the bad girl, but also streetwise enough to kind of navigate things. And so for me, I thought I really needed this to be a sibling relationship of two women because their issues were so intricately tied to their gender. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, it does. It does. And that actually goes into one of the quotes. I had to pick one. I could sit here all day and read your book back to you, but this is the one that you said. This is Violet. She says, "I dreamed of being anywhere but here. Both of us desperate to leave Jackson, but forced to stay by the fear of wandering out in the world without our parents." So after writing both of these characters and fully kind of looking at every different angle, who did you think was the stronger of the sisters, the strongest?
I think they were both strong, but just in different ways. And actually, we haven't really talked about it, but there's a third sister, who also has a point of view in the book. And it's no spoiler. She's deceased.
Right.
Her point of view comes through the book in a series of diary entries. And I think she, too, was smart. I think all three of the sisters were smart, but in different ways. And so Violet was street savvy and kind of street smart. Marigold was book smart. And I'd like to say that, you know, the third sister, Rose, she was smart enough to dream, you know, she could be something bigger than what Mississippi tried to tell her that she had to be. And so to me, they're all smart. And the thing about it is their strengths help the other.
Yeah.
So, you know, Marigold's strength being book smart helps, you know, Violet, and Violet's street smart helps Marigold. And so I think their strengths are what combine to give them this force to overcome.
And as another thing you mentioned, I'm glad you mentioned Rose, because the letters, I can understand if you want to put that in a book, but you do it in a way that it doesn't break the pacing. You still know that things are happening, but you have this the character talking about her sister, as siblings often do, right? Whether they're here or not. But you also have their names, Marigold, Violet, and Rose. They're all names of flowers. And was this something that you had, did you have the story first and then the names? Did the names come to you first and the stories, or did they all kind of come together at the same time?
How did they come? I think what happened is I had Violet's name always from the beginning, and Marigold just seemed like a good girl kind of name. So I was like, okay. So when I incorporated the third sister, it's like, oh, this would help me drive home the theme of the impact of the segregationist South, and that their mother named them after flowers, because despite all this horrific, you know, thing going on around her, all the suppression, she still had the forethought to think, I am bringing something beautiful into the world, something like flowers. And I thought it would help me drive home that theme in the book, that we can still dream and dare to believe that we can do something good in this world.
Were there any subjects that you wanted to further explore before you completed your manuscript? Was there something that you thought about going down that path, or something that you did include, but it was after you had written it? Is there anything else that you want kind of the reader to pull from your story?
You know what? I often think, and I've done this with both my books, I've thought, oh, if I could go back, I would tweak this or I would do that. And with this book, I wanted to include more of those examples of what the segregation of the South did to us. But, you know, first, it's a thriller, so it has to be pacey. Second of all, I'm limited by, you know, word count.
And so, forgot about that. Know, that's a little word count.
I could turn in an 800 page book, but the editor is not going to be very happy about that.
Yeah.
And so there were so many more examples I wanted to talk about, you know, Black maternal death and childbirth and what happens there. And I just couldn't do it all. What, you know, having separate facilities does to a person's psyche. And I couldn't do it all without the book becoming heavy, both physically and emotionally for the reader. And I tried to provide light moments because the theme of the book is so heavy. I have a number of issues around the impact of segregation I would have loved to have included in the book, but there just was no space for it.
But you know, like, and if you ever wanted to do another version with all of those things in there, just let me know, we'll be fine. But one of the things that that we talked about this before, but I wanted to reemphasize was the idea of sisterhood, that these two characters had been through so much, but they still were able to connect with each other. There was never the whole go silent for 15 years or 20 years or something like that. There was still this unity between the sisters. Is that kind of one of the themes that you wanted to bring out of this, or something that you wanted to make sure that the reader could understand, is that the necessity of sisterhood despite what happens in your life?
I'd like to think that this book explores love on several different levels. And so there is that sisterly bond of love between them. There's Black love, because there's a love story in here. There's a love between community and family. And so, you know, the intentionality was, yes, create love. And that included the love of these two sisters, because they were all they had. You know, they had lost their parents. And, you know, relatives who had promised to, you know, look over them and take care of them. I think, you know, Violet says something to the effect of, you know, they went back to their own bills and their own kids and their own troubles. And so I wanted to envelop this book in love, despite the horrific nature of the segregationist South, that there is an undercurrent of love that runs through this book, including the love of these two sisters.
Well, I enjoyed reading this book. I really hope that our listeners go out and get a copy, share it with your sisters, share it with your family. But Wanda, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. This is an amazing book, and thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Amanda, for having me.
Wanda Morris is the author of Anywhere You Run. You can find out more about Wanda at WandaMorrisWrites.com, on Facebook at Wanda Morris Writer, and on Twitter at WandaMo14. Thank you, Wanda, for being a guest on Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.